Bill Alexander, Reel 3.
And debate whether or not they should come to the international brigades. But in fact, with the exception of four, all the ILP contingent went home. And then Tapsell, after a time, came back to the battalion. But that was after the first Aragon offensive.
You were saying that that Cunningham couldn't adapt himself to the rapidly changing military and political situation.
Yes.
What was changing about the political situation?
Well, the political situation was that more and more units of the Spanish Republican Army were becoming organized, their fighting capacity was developing, and there was increasingly an overall strategic conception instead of merely a tactical conception. You hung on to this village or you tried to take this road. So that the offensive in the Aragon, the drive on Saragossa, was there were not only political, there were not only military considerations, there were also political considerations, because a great change was taking place in the anarchism then. As a result of experience, more and more of the anarchists were realizing the need for organization and the need for military discipline. So the whole of the Aragon front, which had been virtually quiet, had to be brought into life. It was ready for life, and so a certain of the international brigades were sent up in order to assist the fighting which would lift the whole level of the struggle in Aragon. And that was the type of political consideration which you had to take into account.
Do you think it was right that Cunningham should have remained in England, or do you think he was still able to contribute to the war?
Well, I'm expressing purely a personal view. It would have been better if the whole lot had stayed in Britain.
Yeah. You mean because of their disagreements?
Because, like a whole number of people, it was a matter of recognizing what was changing and changing yourself. And it would have been better if the lot had changed.
Did the political commissar system, did it change at this point, or did it get better or worse, or was there any noticeable change in it? In the British battalion, or the areas that you observe?
Well, again, I'm not quoting from the British Battalion, because as far as I'm putting my personal experience, that increasingly our work became more political. That, all right, there were times when you may have to intervene to make certain that the cookhouse realized, they had a heavy responsibility to get the grub up on time. You might have to help with some problem of a man's pay or his contact or his wife's allowance. But increasingly, it became a matter of helping the political and fighting morale of the unit you were with.
So you got to Belchite.
Yes.
And you're still on the brigade command.
Yes, that's right.
And your guns played quite an important part in reducing the church tower.
That's right, yes.
After that what?
After that, there was, we took part in a very,
this is still on the Aragon front.
Still on the Aragon front. There was an extremely interesting, from the point of view of military, of the whole military future, there was an extremely interesting attack on a little village called Fuentes del Ebro, which was a village about a mile or so from the banks of the Ebro itself, and which, if taken, could have again opened up the road towards Saragossa. The Listers occupied the village, but then came back out again, and then a decision was made to send in a force of infantry riding on tanks. And it was an idea which, of course, was used with great success afterwards in World War II, but it was what we call a snafu situation, normal, but all fucked up. First, it had been a quiet front, and the 15th Brigade were moving up to occupy the trenches, which had been sitting, well, quietly for months. They got in too late and were seen moving in. Right. Then our bombers were supposed to come over and bomb the fascist trenches. Right. Then the artillery were supposed to shell them. Then there were about 40 Russian tanks lined up behind. And the Spanish battalion in the 15th Brigade were put on these tanks, and then they were to get off as they went over the fascist trenches and occupy them. But A, the fascists were alerted by the change, by the reinforcement, so that they could see it. Secondly, the planes bombed too early, the artillery bombed too early, and the tanks were late. The Spanish battalion hadn't been properly trained for this. I remember them going over, you know, with their blankets on and their mess tins rattling, and the tanks travelled at an extremely high speed, so that a whole number were sort of bounced off. The fascists were ready for them, had got bottles of petrol there, and a whole number of the Russian tanks were set alight or hit by rifle fire. And in fact, the Spanish battalion did not occupy the fascist line. We in the anti-tank were stationed on a ridge, again slightly behind our own front lines, and while this was happening, we gave what we could in the way of fire on the fascist trenches. Then, as often happens when there's a bit of a mess up, somebody gives a panic order, everyone forward, and the British battalion went forward, and in the course of it, the new battalion commander and the new battalion commissar were killed. That's Fry and Wally. Meanwhile, Slater, in the anti-tank, Slater had gone to hospital with dysentery and jaundice, and a lad called Jeff Mildwater had taken command, so we were ordered forward as well. But it would have been simply disaster if we'd gone forward over this crest when the enemy machine guns were largely unsilenced. So I said, right, we'll go forward, and three of us ran forward in order to, as I said, reconnoitre, although I knew what the answer would be. And running back, Jeff Mildwater was hit. And the other lad with us and myself managed to get back. And again, I had this certain feeling of detachment from my body when the bullets are going round. You just run, but you don't feel. Anyway, so we remained there, and I remember that night Bill Painter, who had then been the commissar in the base, came up and spoke to us, and John Mann came up and spoke to us.
Fry, who you say was commanding then and killed in the British battalion's attack, he in fact had been captured at the Jarama, is that right?
That's right, yes.
Repatriated and then returned.
Then returned, yes.
He didn't coincide with Copeman. Copeman had left before Fry came back.
Copeman was sent back home. That's right. And then Fry came out to command the battalion, yes.
And killed very shortly.
Killed very shortly. There was then a silly and wrong approach that until you'd established yourself as a leader, you led from the front. And that's why the right down through the whole of the, not only the British fighting units, but the Americans, which I know about as well, you had this very high proportion of commanders, battalion, company, section commanders who were killed, perhaps usually often in their first action, until they'd established themselves that they weren't yellow.
What was this part of this strong personality thing, one of the side effects from it, that the person had to prove himself a strong man?
Yes, it was there, but it was also a failure of or a lack of understanding in the way of the political command. Back in Britain, Harry Pollitt, I know, was very strong. Don't you damn well go out and get yourself killed. Spain wants you to live. He used that phrase to a number of people who were going out.
When Fry was killed, who took over the battalion, do you
know? This was a period when there were a number of rapid changes. Daly at Kinto, then O'Dare, Fuentes de Ebro was Fry. Now, I am not, it might have been George Fletcher.
Fletcher?
Yes. Mm-hmm. It may have been.
So, after the attack on Fuentes de Nebro, what happened then?
Well, we were withdrawn to the rear. I'm afraid I can't remember the place. I'm certain now it was Mondeca where we'd been before, yes, to the same place. Yeah.
And you didn't see much action after that for quite some time, is that right?
No, it was only a matter of, we certainly had a rest and training there. It may have been a month there.
And that would take you to what, September, was it?
No, it was later than that, because our next action was at Teruel. Yes.
So when were you pulled out of the Aragon offensive?
I can quote dates, but they're all in the books of fit, and I'm not very good on dates anyway. But that was after the Battle of Fuentes.
Yes.
We were pulled back. Oh, over the period, I think we stayed there for a week or even 10 days, but there was very little in the way of fighting. It was a static position.
Yeah. So you were pulled back, you were sent to the Mondekar.
The Mondekar, yes.
And you were there, you think, about a month.
We were there, yes. And at that time, I was asked to go to the battalion, and I was made the second in command, or the adjutant.
About that time, Copeman came back out, didn't he?
Copeman came out just at the time when I was made the second in command.
And who was in command whilst Copeman was away?
Well, that I cannot. I'm pretty certain it was George Fletcher. I can check up on that. But no, while Copeman was away, there'd been three battalion commanders.
Yes.
Daly, who was killed, Paddy O'Dare, who was wounded, and Fry, who was killed. So there were three who were...
So when Copeland came back out, Fletcher was what? He was just put back into the...
Yes, he just went into the machine gun company. That was the place where he was a very capable machine gunner.
And at this time, then you'll be preparing for the Battle of the Ebro, is that right?
Teruel. Teruel, yes.
And that started when?
Well, then Copeman went off to hospital and never came back to the battalion again. And I became the battalion commander, and Sam Wilde was appointed the second in command. Then Tapsell was made the battalion political commissar.
When were you made the battalion commander? Can you remember?
No, I can't I can't remember the dates, but it was while we were in Mondekar and moving up, just as we were preparing to move up to the Teruel front.
But it would be winter, wouldn't it?
Oh yes, it was winter. It was already bitterly cold.
And the British weren't committed, were they, for the first part of the battle?
No, the actual capture of Teruel was by completely Spanish units. We were held, or we were moved up there, ready for the counterattack. And that was a period when the whole battalion slept in a railway tunnel. It was completely full of, it was bitterly cold, there were icicles hanging from the roof. And after we'd been there, the breath of the men melted the icicles, and so although it was completely safe against bombing, it was very uncomfortable. And of course, very cold.
Yeah. Okay. Then you moved into battle.
Then we moved as the fascist counterattack developed. The 15th Brigade was moved into the line, and the battalion held at the start the crest of a cliff, with two companies forward, one the Spanish company on top of a hill, the other one commanding a minor tributary that joined the valley, and these were key positions, because if they'd been taken, then the fascists could have turned, encircled the other battalion of the 15th Brigade that was further to our left.
Was that particularly nasty fighting in Teruel? Was it?
Well, as I say, did not take part in the capture of Teruel. We took part in stopping the counterattack. The Spanish battalion, which was holding this hill, held on for a day under the most intense machine gunning from the air, shelling, and from infantry attack. But finally, they were, well, badly cut up, and what was left was forced to withdraw. Our machine gunners, who were on the top of the hill, did a very excellent job firing on the fascists who were attacking. We then took a company off the crest of the hill and took them down into the valley and established our, which was a very poor military position, but nevertheless we blocked the other possibility of the fascists coming down the valley. In the course of this day, the casualties were quite heavy, but it was a very important action, and the battalion was cited for its bravery by the divisional commander, and I was promoted a captain in the field, which is a military offer, yeah.
How long were you in there? Was the British battalion in there?
It seemed a long time, I can't remember. Then we were withdrawn and put into a little place called Seguro de los Baños, and there we went into an attack, the aim of which being to lessen the fascist pressure on Teruel itself. Can I chip in here a little memory back at Teruel? While we were there, Bill Rust and Charlotte Haldane came up to the battalion, and actually right into the front line, and we held a short meeting on the crest of the cliff in honour of all the men who'd been killed in the fighting. And then they went off back home, or back to the rear. Well, then the battalion went into its next action was at a place called Seguro de los Baños, when the aim was to make an attack and so pull off the heavy pressure which was developing on Teruel. The battalion was advancing, had made an advance, but just about in the late afternoon, the fascists were putting in a counterattack around one of our flanks. There were a lot of their planes overhead, and there was a little man on the fascist side who stood up to wave a flag to show where they were and where and presumably where we were. And I always carried a rifle myself, and I did a silly thing. I also stood up and shot at him, and I got a bullet through my chest and shoulders. And so I then handed over the command of the battalion to Sam, and Sam Wilde, and was taken off to a hospital.
Very seriously wounded, were you?
Well, it would have been, in a way, it was very lucky. It sort of only chipped a bit out of my collarbone. It wouldn't have, you know, it would have healed up and I'd have been back soon. But there were complications, and I began to hemorrhage a lot, and everybody thought I was going to die, and I was in a hospital, and Harry Pollack travelled a very long way to come and see me, and I thought how very kind of him. He only told me afterwards that everybody thought I was going to die, but I didn't. And again, a little incident which I think, indicates the development of medical treatment in warfare. This wound, which went in here and came out in the middle of my back, was plugged with, well, gauze. And that was standard treatment. But I was having repeated hemorrhages from this wound and losing blood. And then there was an American surgeon who'd named Eloessa. He was passing through and they said, come and look at this man. And he said, right, well, if you take out the plugs and let this abscess drain, if he doesn't have a hemorrhage in the next 8 hours, he'll live. And so that was done. And I began to, well, I came off the danger list, but I was still very, very weak, and it was decided to send me home.
And the war ended for you at that?
And the war ended for me, yes.
Can you remember where you were in hospital?
Yes, I was in hospital, first of all in a Spanish hospital, and I can't remember the name because I was delirious. I then went to Benicassim, and then I was taken up to Mataró, where Dr. Tudor Hart was the surgeon in charge, and he helped get my arm back into reasonable working shape.
You said then that Samuel took over.
Yes.
There was one SAR note that I read in Thomas that that after you were being wounded, that two people actually in the battalion were actually shot. Is that right?
That is a bit of Copemanism. Oh. There were two people who attempted to desert to the fascist line. And when they were picked up by us, but they had plans of our position, there was a very strong feeling against them. They were court-martialed, and they were put in a Labour battalion, which was the standard thing. That is, doing fortifications at night in the front line. And there, they were killed by artillery fire. And I have checked extremely carefully on this because it involved me, and I am convinced that they were killed by artillery fire, and people who saw, who were in the bombardment, state that is case.
But it wasn't Copeman who said that. It was Thomas, Hugh Thomas.
Yeah, but Copeman used it in his book. What is it?
Reason in Revolt.
Reason in Revolt, yes. And you'll find the more you study the Spanish War, the more you'll find that everybody picks up stories from everybody else,
exactly,
and they become truths. Were you there yesterday when the little clash occurred?
Yes.
About whether or not the Moors were singing the
international
anthem. At Jarama, I have cross-questioned in a most careful way a whole number of people who were there, and when I write my book, I shall tell the truth. This man, Yank Levy, who then was excitable and still is excitable, he's apparently written to Vincent Broome, and stupid statements. He was just a primer, and he was talking about lynching the divisional commander. Well, I doubt if he knew his name at the time, you know. So, on this story about whether of these two, they were killed in action, but as part of a Labour battalion, and that is standard practice in pretty well every army, that if you're court-martialed, I'm prepared to believe that in other battalions, in fact I know, in other battalions, not in the 15th Brigade, but in other battalions, men were shot. But on the basis not only of my feelings, but of my own investigations, they were not.
Just one question for the record. That's a statement from Thomas. You know, I put the page references to it. Do you think Thomas took that straight from Coburn? And did he check with you? Did he check with you on that?
Right, may I give you my opinion? Slater was never the commissar. What?
That's from Thomas.
Ah, no, but the reading here, it looks as though Commissar Hugh Slater was never the commissar of the battalion.